today's podcast, we're going to talk about dysfunctional families. What does that even mean? Well, we're going to talk about it and hopefully illuminate that subject for you.
Welcome to the Art of Raising Humans.
Hello, and welcome to the Art of Raising Humans. I'm Kyle.
And I'm Sarah.
And today we want to talk about dysfunctional families. You know, we hear that term a lot in our society, Sarah, like, man, my family's so dysfunctional.
Yeah, yeah.
You heard that before?
Yeah, it's like something's broke.
Yeah,
our word for that is dysfunctional.
Okay. And many times, though, I don't think people even know what that means. Like, what are we calling dysfunctional, you know?
Yeah.
And so we can label our families or other families as dysfunctional. Mm-hmm. But I think it's really important to understand what makes a family functional or dysfunctional.
Yeah, yeah. What does that look like?
And so before we delve into that topic, which I think will be very helpful to illuminate things for you, is I want to remind you that you can go to our website at parentinglegacy.com. And on that website, we've got so many great resources to help you and your family and equip you to be the parent you want to be. And this February, in particular, when this is coming out, we've got a lot of great speaking opportunities coming up. And so that's why we're trying to broach these topics. We think in 2023, we really want to hit some topics that are really foundational to families being successful, for families growing closer together, to having the deep connected relationships they want. So we just hope that you share this podcast with your friends and family, send it on to people who you think this could be helpful for. In particular, these next two podcasts are going to be about conflict.
Right, because that's a big piece of function or dysfunction.
That's right. Well, I mean, that's kind of what is at the core of a dysfunctional family. It's a family that doesn't know how to handle conflict. So in the podcast today, we're not going to talk about how to resolve conflict. We're just going to kind of discuss, describe, illuminate what it means to be dysfunctional in a family.
Yeah.
You know? And would you say, I think almost every family is dysfunctional in some way in this regard.
Right. We're not perfect. Families aren't perfect. So we want to just kind of show, hey, watch for this, look for that. And specifically, conflict is a big area where those seeds can go in. And if those parts aren't going well, if conflict isn't being handled well, then it just sort of goes out to the whole family and how you all function. And so we want to kind of bring that to life.
Yes. Well, if you start from there, when you have a home and you have people, human beings living together, conflict is inevitable.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. I remember
not even meant to be avoided.
Sure.
It's going to be there. It's part of humans working with other humans. They're going to have their own ideas and those are going to conflict sometimes.
Yeah. I remember specifically, Sarah, when we were getting our master's degree, we were in group therapy. We're in a group therapy class and they talked about a guy doing group therapy with families. And there was an audience watching the group therapy. And the first group, the group family he did, there was very little arguing at all. It was very much everybody was sweet and kind to each other. And it was all they all flowed really well. Second family he had, this family, there was a lot of arguing, some even anger presented or upset feelings or sad, whatever, kind of, it was all over the board, kind of a little bit, you know, it was a little more chaotic. And at the end of that, he had the audience kind of rate which of these families they thought was healthier. And almost 100% of them thought the first one was.
Right.
But in reality, the first one was super dysfunctional. You know, the second one was much more healthy because they were willing to talk about things.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't scared of the conflict.
Yeah.
Whereas the first family was, they're all putting on a mask.
Yeah. They just avoided. Yeah. They're just all very avoidant.
And they're all really afraid of conflict and were not willing to do that. So I remember thinking about that. One, because it helped me feel a little better because in my childhood, there was a lot of arguing, you know, not to say we handled it functionally for sure, but it was like, man, we were definitely talking about stuff a lot, right? Now, there were some stuff that we did not talk about that we, you know, in retrospect, you know, we could have been much more honest and forthright about it and would have really helped our family. But going into the family we wanted to form, we knew we didn't want it to be a family that was arguing all the time. And we didn't want it to be a family that never talked about anything.
Couldn't talk about things, right? I mean, you know those families where it's like, oh, we don't talk about Bruno.
Yeah,
we don't talk about it. We hide these things are topics off the table. Mm-hmm. They don't come up. We don't talk about them. You just move on and act like everything's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So that isn't healthy. But how you have conflict.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's
once again, it's not like just having conflict. It's like, yes, we're succeeding.
They're fighting all the time.
Oh my gosh, the kids are always mad at each other. It's so great. Yeah, they don't fake it. They just don't like each other.
We say it how it is.
That's right. So we're not talking about that either.
Right.
But we are, in general, I think in society, taught as kids to avoid conflict. You know, mm-hmm. as an elementary school counselor, it's like the mission statement almost every school that I was a part of or got to participate in to try to get conflict out of the classroom. You know, if one kid was having a conflict with another kid, you were immediately, you know, you're taught to just get the kids away from each other.
And don't you kind of, you could feel everyone tense up.
Mm-hmm.
Oh no, there's a conflict. Right.
Yeah.
So learning that. And so it sort of gave permission of, oh, conflict is okay. Oh, we can actually invite that into a space.
Yeah.
It's how it happens.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think in our society, those kids are learning this not to engage conflict. Conflict's
yeah.
bad. Conflict in the classroom is bad. Conflict at home is bad.
Yeah. You know? Ignore it, walk away, yeah. and all these different...
Well, it seems like you pointed out as we were looking over the notes to this is sometimes it's just ignoring it. Sometimes it's acting like it doesn't exist. We don't talk about it. Or it's exploding
yeah.
every time it happens.
That's almost, in my mind, it's like a stamping it out.
Yes.
Oh, we're going to have conflict? No, we're not. I'm going to shut it down. I'm going to get big. I'm going to get loud. I'm going to get yeah. intimidating. And I'm just going to shut this conflict down because I don't want it.
I've had teenagers come in, Sarah, to the office when they're getting help. And the teenagers will talk about how when they would share their emotions, the parents would get really upset at them. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And then they would go to their room to get away from all that. And then they get upset at them for going in their room. And it was like a really confusing thing for teenagers to experience this. Because like, you don't want me to have emotions, yet mm-hmm. when I have them, I don't know what to do with them, is you seem to want to have no conflict. So I'm isolating in my room to keep conflict from happening. But then you're saying that's creating a conflict too, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's this constant kind of mixed message parents get, where they want the kids to be themselves, to be open and talk about things. But then if it's things they don't want to talk about or things
yeah.
that are uncomfortable or
yeah.
they're just having a bad day, the parent doesn't want to hear it. They want it to shut down.
Yeah.
They want the kids just to get along, act like you like each other. And they might even say stuff like that. Like, at least act like you like each other.
And I think that's kind of hard because I think we've all been there as parents where
yeah.
oh, you're just like, not today, not right now. I'm already too full. I don't want this conflict. I just need to shut it down, guys. Shut it down.
Yeah.
And it's hard to always kind of be open and create space for the conflict.
When I was thinking about Sarah, I think lots of times for me, I want to shut down conflict when I'm already conflicted. You know, maybe
yeah.
I'm already stressed about something. I'm trying to get something done. And it's like that conflict, I don't have time for that conflict.
Mm-hmm.
I've already got my own conflict going on within me. So I think a lot of parents, that's why we want to shut it down, you know?
Yes.
And at times, you're going to do that. Every parent's going to do that. I know we were just in Disney World for several days, and there was times I just wanted to shut down conflict, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There was that one day where Brennan was sick, and I wanted to do things, and his sickness was annoying the snot out of me because I felt like it was a conflict. I had goals I wanted to achieve in the Magic Kingdom, and his sickness was deterring me from those goals, and I had very little compassion. And it's because I felt conflicted inside me.
Yeah.
I wanted to care for my son, but I also wanted to do the thing I wanted to do. And I felt like Brendan was stopping me from doing it, you know?
Yeah.
So I kind of wanted to get big and mad at him to somehow make him not tell me he's sick.
Yeah.
I wanted him just to act like he was better, you know?
Yeah.
So I think a lot of us do that, and that's going to happen. The point isn't that we never do that. The point is to know that's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And to know inevitably.
We want to highlight where the dysfunction or the, you know, where these things take place. So just when it happens, we're going to do it. We're going to mess up. We're humans.
Yeah.
But something in us goes, oh, wait. That's okay. I see what's happening here.
Yeah.
And we're aware of it.
Yeah. And inevitably, we need to come back and address the
yeah.
conflict. That's what's going to bring about health.
The awareness will allow you the opportunity to repair.
Yeah.
And repair is what will help heal your relationship, help your child to grow up and be healy.
Whoa. Stop there. That's for the next podcast. Chill out.
Yeah. Take that back.
We'll get, we'll raise that. We'll get into that later. But okay. So we are taught to avoid conflict. And the goal lots of times in homes is to have a house that is conflict free.
Yeah.
And schools also teach our kids how to avoid conflict. You know, mm-hmm. constantly trying to make classrooms conflict free. So they're getting this message all the time from the time they're very little, is what I notice as a school counselor, Sarah, is they're getting this message nonstop from the time they wake up, time they go to bed, that conflict is not good. And sometimes that is true, right? Sometimes conflict, if somebody doesn't know how to handle the conflict, it can be very toxic, very detrimental.
Yeah, cause a lot of harm.
Yeah, I mean, there's times where I know there's teenagers will tell me things and I'll say, you want to talk about that with your parent? And they don't, because they think it will cause a conflict that could be irreparable to their relationship with their parent.
I think we all have those in various relationships where we think, I can't go there. I can't engage that conflict because the stakes are too high. Too much could be lost.
Yeah.
And I can honor that. Mm-hmm. That can be true. Sometimes you need to put it aside. We just need to be aware of that in our families.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking about that as a parent with my children. I wonder if there's places they feel like they can't talk to me.
Yeah, it's off limits.
They can't bring that conflict up.
Yeah, I can't handle that conflict,
And just be brave enough to be curious where those might be.
Yeah.
Watch for those things where you feel like your child goes, oh yeah, I got to pull back.
Mm-hmm.
I can't engage this.
Yes,
you can't handle it.
Well, so we want to create a space to where the kids feel like that's never something they have to worry about, you know, that we can handle it. But also realizing there may be things that we have blind spots and the kids go, yeah, mom and dad don't see it, but I really can't bring that up. Every time I've brought that up, they've blown up at me. You know?
Well, and that's where we're watching our reactions, going back to that dysfunction.
Yeah.
What's my reaction in the conflict? Am I getting big and aggressive and shutting it down? Am I passive?
Yeah.
Am I ignoring it? What am I doing in these conflicts? What do I need to be watching for?
Yeah. And so anytime you're seeing the kid kind of pull back and shut down and not willing to face the conflict, I think those are things to note, you know, things to watch for and be curious.
Mm-hmm.
Say, what is that about? How come we can't seem to talk about this, right?
Yeah.
So one of the most common things, Sarah, that you and I see in families that really goes, yep, that's dysfunctional conflict resolution right there. That's a dysfunctional thing, is something called triangulation. Okay.
Yeah.
So triangulation, as the name implies, if you can picture a triangle, you got three different parts to the triangulation, three different roles that are being played by the people within the conflict. And would you mind identifying those roles, Sarah?
I've kind of seen them with different names, but common one is first you have the aggressor. So that's the person attacking. The persecutor.
Yeah.
And then you have the victim, right? So whoever the persecutor is attacking is the victim.
Yeah.
And then you have the other party come in and they're going to save the victim.
Yeah. Yeah. So typically, it looks like you'll have somebody who's identified as, like you said, the meaner one, the one who's causing the conflict. Mm-hmm. And then the victim feels unable to stand up to that person.
Yeah.
So they go and get somebody else team up. And it's like a two against one thing.
Right.
And so just initially, that's part of the problem, right? When you have conflict and you got two against one, what tends to happen is then that persecutor feels attacked and they feel kind of victimized by the other two. Right.
And you can just imagine this going around and around that triangle with no real resolution.
Yeah. So I wrote down a few different examples. I'd love for you to chime in. Mm-hmm. One that I was thinking of that's super common, lots of kids complain about it, is mom and dad teaming up against the kid, you know, teaming up against the teenager. So the teenager, I'm thinking of a few different ones I've helped with where maybe the teenager's teenage son or daughter will get mad at mom or dad and yell at them. And then the other parent will step in and be the rescuer with the cape on and be like, I've got this, back off
you
from
were
her.
Yelling
you will not talk to your mom that way.
Yeah,
it's a real classic one, you know. Mm-hmm. And then the kid's confused now, like, why are you part of this conflict, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The problem was between me and my mom or dad, and now you're jumping in, and now the conflict gets really dicey because now it's all about how angry they are at what you did as opposed to the other conflict.
Well, and I think I think bring some conversation to that is, I think a lot of times the other parent feels like, oh, I'm going to have your back.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be a equal. We're going to be this front for the children. Yeah. We're on the same page.
Yeah, a unified team.
This is healthier.
Yeah.
But in times of conflict, that's really not what you're accomplishing.
Yeah.
That's not the space to be the unified front.
Yeah.
Because we'll get into this later. It distracts from the conflict, doesn't actually bring real resolution.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's sort of the intent. My thought
100%.
Is, you know, where you think,
you feel like you're a bad parent if you don't step in and do
right? I've got to back this person up. It's really important that they get their homework done.
But what's important, though, it reinforces, though, to the kid that they're the persecutor, they're the bad person.
Yeah.
Mom or dad, whoever's getting yelled at, is the victim.
and you had to go get this other person. We couldn't solve
it. And I'm telling you, the kids resent that. The kids resent that because they're like, I don't understand why he or she keeps stepping in. Like, this is between me and them. And really, the other parent, lots of times, needs to learn the skill to stand up
for themselves. It's a missed opportunity. Yeah. That parent and that child needed to resolve that conflict. Yeah. Yep. The other person coming in takes that away.
And then what happens, you know, this is, I like to use this example. Then the teenager now feels like they're the victim, you know, that the maybe the dad yelling at them is the persecutor. And they go on to get a rescuer by calling their girlfriend or boyfriend or calling their friend and getting on the phone and complaining about what a jerk their dad is or whatever. And so so then they continue the triangulation through that phone call.
Yeah.
You know? And once again, what's getting resolved? Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Even if the child then does what, let's say they were supposed to do the dishes.
Yeah.
Then they finally do the dishes. The conflict wasn't really resolved.
Mm-hmm.
You got them to do the thing, perhaps.
Yeah.
But them calling and the fallout between mom and the kid still is there. And then they're talking to their friend. And all that, all those emotions are still there. They're unresolved.
That's good. And then another example I had was a parent, this is a real common one too, especially when they're little, you know, elementary age, is is one parent doesn't like how the other one's parenting. So one parent thinks, you know, typically just in general terms, it's the mom is maybe more nurturing with the little kid and dad is more aggressive, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so then you'll see mom team up with the kid against the dad, you know? And lots of, I've even seen sometimes where the kid sees this dynamic and will use it to their advantage, you know?
Yeah.
So as soon as dad gets upset, the kid will run to mom, look what dad's doing, mom. And then once again, you see how the triangle takes shape. Now the dad feels very hurt that mom is leaving him and joining with the kids. Now he feels like the victim.
Nobody likes being teamed up on.
I mean, just if you've ever been there, it just feels like, what is happening? How do, am I really that bad? You know, and you'll see such defensiveness. You know, you don't see any receptivity or openness or willingness to learn or listen. It's all just, I am not what you say I am. I'm not that bad. You know, so whoever's being labeled the persecutor ends up switching to the victim and becoming very
and
defensive.
It just has that thread through it all of win-lose dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this team is going to win, they're going to lose.
Well, and once again, that we're not even on the same team.
Yeah.
We're on opposite teams.
Right.
Yeah? You're on that team and we can't let you in. And then the last one
pick
that I thought of is the most common is siblings. You know, siblings turning against each other. So I know there's three siblings of mine. That was a real common one. I'm even when we were married and talking about having kids, I kept saying, I don't want to have three. Now we have three, it's great, but I didn't want to have three because in my experience, three was always two against one.
Yeah.
It seemed like every time it was one of us was the victim, one was the persecutor, one was the rescuer. And you were...
Well, sometimes it'll be a couple siblings and a parent.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, you have the kid who maybe, you know, I don't want to say like golden child, but maybe they're the sweet one.
Yeah,
and so-and-so is always the aggressive one
that's good.
And run to mom or run to dad and so-and-so hit me again or so-and-so.
Yeah.
And you see that repeating and repeating and repeating because mom or dad steps in and they yell at the kid who did something. And
well, I'm even thinking when you said that, you might have the golden child and the black sheep.
Yeah.
You know? So then the golden child always goes, you know, they know as soon as something happens, they just go, mom, dad.
Mm-hmm.
And then immediately mom or dad run to their aid.
Yeah.
And then they just like, look, mom and dad are on my side, you know? And you'll see that kid, that black sheep gets even more resentful and angry about that because then pretty soon they just think that's who I am.
They kind of step more into that role.
I am the persecutor.
Even if, let's say it shifts all the time, but the kids, the dynamic of just the kids running to the parent going, I need someone to side with me. I'm a victim here. Let's go team up. And that dynamic is something that you want to watch for. You want to be aware of, oh, what's happening here? Am I coming in and siding with a kid against a kid? And I think, again, you feel like that's what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to see who's the guilty party, who's not the, and, you know, lay out the punishment or, you know, I'm supposed to fix it all.
Yeah. Well, and I would say a good way to notice that is, am I being a referee?
Yes.
So if I feel like I am being a referee, if I feel like I'm putting out red cards and yellow cards or throwing out yellow flags, if you feel like it's your job to dole out the penalties and to point fingers, you know, you are triangulating.
You know?
So if that is happening, then just notice that. And your job is not to be a referee. Your job is to be a coach.
Right.
Okay.
But we're not going to talk about that.
We're not going to talk about that right now. And actually, we did a whole other podcast about being a coach.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
If you want to listen to that podcast, there's a great one about not being a referee and being a coach, because I really think that is a pivotal shift in almost all the parents I help with. If you're trying to have siblings who know how to resolve conflict with each other, is moving away from being a referee and start being a coach. So it is not our job to take sides with other people. You want to watch, am I teaming up? I was thinking, you know, one other example you might have, you might have also, even with adult kids, you know, sometimes a parent might call up an adult kid to complain about another parent.
Yeah.
You know? In divorce situations, it's real common.
Yeah.
Or those
I would say, or it's like, let me tell you all the things going wrong. Hey, could you call so-and-so and just, you know.
You know, I even remember, this sounds silly, but I remember even in college, Sarah, there was maybe a girlfriend I had, somebody I was dating, and I wanted that relationship to continue, and the relationship was about to break up. I would, in my immaturity, call up my mom and be like, hey, mom, would you mind calling so-and-so and just talking to her about, you know, I mean, how this relationship is really good.
Yeah.
And I was like, and I loved my mom's response almost every time was like, I'll pray about that. And I was really glad looking back that my mom didn't try to rescue me.
Yeah.
My mom didn't think, oh, I need to fix this for Kyle.
Yeah.
She instead just said, hey, I'll pray about that. I knew when she said that, that meant, I love you, son, but you've got it. I'm not going to rescue this. I'm not calling no girl up and trying to like help salvage your relationship. But you know, some families might do that.
Yeah.
Some parents might do that. They might call up that other person.
And maybe it's not girlfriend, but they would do it with between siblings.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Or, you know.
Between friends even.
Yeah.
Between friends or something like that, some conflict in school. You know, they might do that with a teacher or whatever. So we wanted to spend this podcast. The goal for this one is just to illuminate to families what dysfunctional conflict resolution looks like, okay? And wanting everybody who's listening to this to be more aware and notice when it's happening, okay? So if conflict is not getting resolved and it seems like we're facing the same conflict over and over and over again, it's probably because some form of triangulation or we're either avoiding conflict or blowing up and trying to squash it, you know? Mm-hmm. So just look for these things in your family, because I think this is one of the most important skills you can give your kids, is the ability to face conflict, to understand that conflict is not bad and it's necessary for us to have real meaningful connection with other human beings.
Yeah. In order for families to function and thrive and do well, this is a really important part of that.
Really important part. I think it's something that we, every day, it's something every day that we face on how we're choosing to face conflict. So I hope this topic was really helpful to you and helped give you maybe a language to use. Triangulation is, I thought, really helpful once it was illuminated for me to start seeing it and start putting some healthy boundaries, which we'll talk about more in the following episode next week, and really give you some specific ways to help change these dynamics in your family and start resolving conflict in a healthy way. So hope you're having a fantastic day. Definitely give us, we'd love to get 5-star reviews and any comments and any suggestions on other topics that we could face in the 2023 and talk about this year. We'd love to hear back from you. So thank you for your time.
Thanks for listening.
The Art of Raising Humans podcast should not be considered or used as counseling, but for educational purposes only.